Welcome to Desert Island Discs with your host, John Bruford. Hello and welcome to the internationally renowned Gambling Files offshoot Desert Island Discs. I'm your host for this voyage into the unknown, John Bruford. Desert Island Discs, as if any lawyers are listening, no relation whatsoever to any existing programs, certainly none that have been running since 1942, because ours takes place very much on a tropical island with tasty, delicious desserts. And therefore has no correlation at all to anything else that, or that might be copying us.
For sure.
And fucking with us by going back in time and doing it decades before we were born. Anyway, so the point of Desert Island Discs is it's about people. It's about some of the gambling industry's more interesting characters. And when we can't get hold of them, we get people like today's guest. But what they get to, so on this tropical island, all of their basic needs are taken care of. So their food, shelter, there's fresh water. We're all good, right? Anyway, they get to choose luxury items. Three albums, three books, three movies, one song, ideally not on the albums, one pet, one object stroke thing, one dessert, which allowed us to give this its name, and one piece of advice to give to their younger selves, and they choose at what time in their lives they get the advice. So with that in mind, I'd like to introduce our wonderful guest today, Dr. Maris Catania, Senior Safer Gambling Consultant at SG Certified. Dr. Catania, welcome.
It must hurt to call me Dr. Catania, not Maris, right now.
Well, it's not physically painful, but I heard that anybody can get a doctorate.
Thank you for that start. Yes, it was extremely easy.
Was it in a cereal packet? I mean, you can get pretty much anything in Malta, right?
Yes. That's how I got it, actually. It was Cocoa Pops.
I opened some Rice Krispies the other day, and there was, I mean, it was a very old box of Rice Krispies. It wouldn't happen, you know, now, but I got a Curacao gaming license.
That's even easier. You can get it with cornflakes.
No, historically, it was even easier. It's not easier now. It's a very old box of Rice Krispies that I just had lying around. You know, mystery gift inside. I'm just kidding about Curacao. But back in the day, what's that other place? There's a couple of other islands that are saying it now. I should have used one of those, shouldn't I? Vanuatu, that's one of them, isn't it? Had a Vanuatu gaming license in it. Yeah, that works. Dr. Cadet, so SG certified. So we have a mutual friend.
We do.
Was certainly one of my favorite people in the gambling industry. I'm pretty sure she'll never come on and do this. Is Laura De Silva Gomes from SG Certified, is she a doctor as well? Or
no.
She should be, though. She'd be a good doctor.
Yes. No, she's amazing. Super smart, which is the reason why she wouldn't do such a podcast. She knows her stuff really well, and she's a pleasure.
Which is why I would have wanted her on here instead of you.
Yeah, like the fourth best option.
Yeah, basically. It's sort of like, I don't know why I've just remembered this, but I was remembering stories of people in the Merchant Navy during World War II. And they were, you know, the Merchant Navy played an incredibly difficult role, and a lot of sacrifices were made by some very, very brave people. Some of them in the North Sea in winter, very, very cold, to have a little semblance of warmth while they're on deck, they used to just piss themselves. And I was thinking, this is a bit like pissing myself. You know, I'm a bit warmer for a minute, but I've still pissed myself, haven't I?
I'm really happy we're doing this podcast right now. It's so enriching. It's so informative. It's changing my life, my everything. Thank you.
I'm glad that you're embracing the format.
Thank you.
So, Dr. Kateri, so your background, you, I mean, you, your rise to prominence, you were at Kindred for many years. And now you're working with SG Certified and the magnificent Laura. Shall we talk about what you might want on a tropical island?
Okay.
Just throwing it out there.
Okay.
Let's start with your three albums.
Okay. So.
Don't have to be in any particular order.
Okay. No, no, it's fine. I'm into rock music a lot. So my three albums would be Nirvana, Nevermind, Korn, Life is Peachy, and then Radiohead, the band.
Okay. I'm very familiar with two of those. Nevermind and the Bends. Korn, I'm not so familiar with. Is that the same sort of period? Because, I mean, Nevermind and the Bends, you're talking early to mid-90s, right?
Yes, no, it's the same period, actually.
You so is this, was this
album?
No.
Oh, no, you have to.
But it is was that like a formative period? Is that like, you know, your mid-teens or something?
Yes, I still remember. When I listened to Korn the first time, it was on a... So I had just got a CD player. Yes, for my 13th birthday. Amazing. And the sister of my friend gave me this album. And I was... I still remember the day. So I used to hate catching the bus because of people. And because of... I didn't like people. I don't like people touching me as well. And, you know,
that's what she said.
We were going to have a lot of those. And
that's what she said.
And Malta gets very sweaty. So sounds, people are loud. So I cherished my CD player. So I always used to read and listen to music. And I still remember the first time I heard that album. It was amazing. And the first song is mainly gibberish, but it's so good. And even now when I listen to that album, I have to listen like the full album from the start till the end. I don't mix the songs and everything. It's beautiful.
That's very interesting because that's something I've been thinking about a lot lately because it was controversial whether to have three albums on this. Because the concept of an album is quite outdated now.
Yeah.
It's more like lots of individual songs that are released at the same time. But, you know, back in the day, an album was a journey. And, you know, I fucking hate you too.
I do as well.
But one of my favorite albums is Achtung Baby.
I don't know it.
And actually, it's fantastic. It's nothing like anything else they've done as well, which is probably why I like it. But it's one of those albums where, you know, you go on a journey. And it's probably the last time I remember hearing an album and it being in my head, and I guess emotionally, a whole package rather than something where, oh, that's a single, single, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, that is quite an unusual thing now, I think. Well, it's a very unusual thing now. But then the way that we listen to music, the way that we find music and it's delivered, I mean, it's completely different now.
It's not the same as before. But no, that's one album I have to listen from start to finish. And the transition and the journey is just beautiful.
Okay.
Well, even if you don't like it, you have to lie.
What was it called again?
It's Life is Peachy.
Okay, it might be something I introduce the kids to later.
You should. It's a very kids-oriented CD.
Yeah, they listen to quite a variety of stuff. I think they'll be receptive. And obviously, I mean, most people know Nevermind, I think. I mean, that was... Nevermind I've always found quite interesting since I listened to it differently after Kurt Cobain revealed the influence of the Pixies.
Okay.
And I liked it more after that. See, I know this is controversial. I could always take or leave it. I always preferred Pearl Jam. And there was no particular reason for that. It was probably just timing. But I recognize, you know, I mean, it's a great album and there's some phenomenal songs on it, and Smells Like Teen Spirit is unreal. But Cobain said Smells Like Teen Spirit was written trying to be their version of a Pixies song in the format of what he calls loud, quiet, loud. Uh-huh. And actually, when you listen to it with that in mind, it's like, fuck, yeah, okay. I could actually imagine the Pixies doing this.
Mm-hmm. To be fair, it was between Nevermind and Unplugged in New York.
Okay. Did you ever hear the Pearl Jam Unplugged? No. It's very, very good.
No, but it's the rawness of Kurt Cobain's voice, the lyrics, it's just... And when I first heard it, I was quite young, and it was just like absolutely amazing, you know, And Unplugged in New York is really good because he's amazing live. And when he sang Where Did You Sleep Last Night, it's like proper emotions. It's impressive.
Okay. And The Bends, which, you know, hugely influential album. I know Radiohead are fundamentally a rock band, but they're also a very unusual one. How did you... Korn and Nirvana, you can see how they sit together. Radiohead, it's slightly different. So how did you get to Radiohead? Was it like most of us hearing Creep?
It was at university, actually. When I was doing my degree, I had a really good friend of mine, and we're still good friends, I hope, Mark, who introduced me to Radiohead. And I absolutely love them. And that was my favorite album from them, it was like when I started listening to Nirvana, to Korn, then I went to Slipknot. I had a face with Cradle of Filth, so more like really hard rock. But then once I started like hearing Radiohead, the vocals, I'm into lyrics a lot. So I always listen to the lyrics almost sometimes more than the music itself.
Just as an aside, I've always wondered or thought that it would be a great name for a house, Cradle of Filth.
I'll consider that.
I think it would please my neighbours. The delivery men going up to their door going, Cradle of Filth.
Why not?
I bought The Bends on a bizarre thing. So... I was a huge fan of a comedian called Bill Hicks, and I was gutted when he died. I was absolutely gutted. I'd have been 19 when he died, and I had this very strange experience. I was sitting in this place I was working in Exeter. I was about 23, and I was just twatting about on the internet. So the internet existed 27 years ago. I was just twatting about on the internet. And I did some kind of bizarre search for Bill Hicks. And this was before searches are indexed the way they are now. Mm-hmm. And I found the Bill Hicks Wildlife Rehabilitation Fund in Austin, Texas. And I'm like, what the fuck is this? This is bizarre, right?
Okay.
And I emailed them to say, hi, I was just doing a search for some Bill Hicks stuff. What the fuck? And I started corresponding with this lady there whose name's gone clean out of my head. And, you know, we were just shooting the shit. And I donated some money because she explained that Bill was a friend of theirs and he allowed them to use his name because it brought donations in and it helped them to keep going. And he was a huge animal lover. So It sort of makes sense in a roundabout sort of way. And we got talking about music, as you do. And God, this really is a roundabout route. I'm really sorry. This is about you, not me.
It's okay. It's okay. I know you're a bit represented. It's fine.
Oh, thank God. She recommended Grace by Jeff Buckley.
Okay.
And I'd never heard it. And I walked up the road to a record shop and I found it and I listened to it and, you know, what a fucking record that is. And I was like, wow. And I just sort of started looking for other stuff. And I found an article which was about things that had been dedicated to Bill Hicks after he died. Things that had been dedicated to Bill Hicks, not necessarily after he died. Uh-huh. And the Benz is dedicated to Bill Hicks.
Really? I had no idea.
And I'd never heard Radiohead. And in my journey of suddenly discovering new music, I walked up to the record shop again and I picked up the Benz and I took it home and listened to it. And that was the first time I ever heard Radiohead, just because they liked Bill Hicks as well. Anyway, sorry about that. Let's get back to you, shall we?
It's okay. I can interview you if you want to.
It wouldn't be that interesting, to be honest.
I'm sure, but I can still do it.
I did. I think I've told this one on the other podcast. I'm not sure. I did have an evening. It's working for the same place. I was about 25 at this point. And I was walking home, and it was about 3 o'clock in the morning, walking home from work. And I was quite tired. And middle of the week, and Exeter was absolutely silent. Didn't even see a car. And I was walking up this hill towards my place. Out of nowhere, I heard the song Corpus Christi Carol from Grace, which is really beautiful. It's a falsetto. It's a stunning song. But out of nowhere, 3 o'clock in the morning, crystal clear, really friggin' loud. And I'm like, oh, I love this song. So I sit on this wall and I smoke a cigarette and I listen to this song. And the song ends and nothing comes on after it. And I walk home and I go to bed. That's it. But it was just this gorgeous experience. And so later, I emailed the lady from the Bill Hicks Wildlife Rehabilitation Fund again. Uh-huh. They are accepting donations. And I told her that story. And she said, oh, I'll tell his mum. She loves hearing stories about his music reaching people.
Aww.
And I'm like, because I love shit like that. And I love telling artists that I meet what their stuff means to me. Because once it leaves them, mm-hmm. it's this mutant and it becomes whatever it is to whoever embraces it. But that Jeff Buckley's mum might have heard that fucking story, that blows my mind. Anyway, so we got you three albums. Three books. Got to pick your three books now. I think you're going to have Professor Mark Griffiths' A to Z in here.
I should.
Could you just explain to the listeners what? So Professor Griffiths' name is well known in the gambling industry because he's co-authored or authored so many studies on addiction issues. And for those of us listening in black and white, it's an A to Z of, what is it, Maris?
Sexual perversions and paraphilias. It is so good. Honestly.
Has it given you ideas?
Of course. It's full of sticky notes. My husband is so happy.
What would you like for Christmas, dear? I'd like a highlighter pen.
And you sitting comfortably waiting for my next instructions. No, it is a really good book. I really, really enjoyed it. It's not the type of book that you just sit down and read it, though, because it's quite, it can be quite heavy. But
you just dip in and out, yeah.
Yes, but it's so good.
I mean, when you first got it, did it live on your bedside table?
Of course. Everywhere. To be fair, I did carry it, everywhere with me, and every now and then I would just let me read about sexomnia. I mean, there's everything on it. Sexual calligraphy fetishes, sexual cannibalism. This is just S.
Did you say sexual calligraphy?
Yes, I told you. It is a really good book.
Fuck. So that's available at all good booksellers.
And it is so well researched, so it's not like it's... Obviously, it's Mark Griffiths, so what do you expect?
Yeah, he's a distinguished professor.
Yes, he is. And unlike a PhD, not everyone can be a distinguished professor.
No, they can't. When are you going to be a professor?
I don't know.
I've heard it's easy. Three books, Maris. What are your three books? What's gonna help you through those long days living in paradise?
This was the most difficult one because I think the albums, it wasn't that difficult to think about. The three books would be Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Wow.
I love it so much. I love Douglas Adams. I love how he writes. I love the whole concept of those books. Then there's another one called The Good Samaritan by John Mars.
That rings a bell. Has that been adapted into something?
I don't know, but I might have mentioned it to you because I haven't read it like years ago.
I think it's one of those books that Amazon keeps sending me emails about.
Oh, that's not really a good sign. It's not an easy read, let's say that, but I really like it. And then there's Chasing the Screen by Johan Hari.
Okay, tell me about the books then. What do they mean to you? Why are these your choices?
So Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, I read it the first time in my teenage years and I was obsessed. I love the whole concept. I love how it's like it's a relaxing read. So if I have a stressful day nowadays, I actually sometimes just go and read parts of it. It is just done and it's so hilarious. And I love, there's the character Marvin. Have you read this book?
I have read this book.
Okay, less judgment then. But you have, like, you know, you have Marvin, the android, and he's depressed and everything. And then you have all the eccentric characters there. And even the concept on its own is just so amazing. Like, even just considering how it starts, that you have, like, you know, the Earth is going to be removed because they need to build a bypass. And it's something that I would expect mostly in Malta, for example, but even just the fact that Arthur Dent is so, like, in the beginning, like, even the transition when he finds the yellow bulldozer and he's just brushing his teeth and he sees it, like, even how it's described, it's just brilliant. And all the characters and the poetries and stuff, it's just, yeah.
Did you ever see the original BBC adaptation of it?
No.
It would have been about 1982, 83-ish. And it's, you know, it's 82, 83. So, like, the, you know, two-headed Zaphod Beeblebrox is
exactly
maybe a little clunky. But they, you know, they really tried to capture the spirit of it. I mean, the BBC at that time was doing some really great stuff. But, we are talking about a legendary book and a legendary writer, aren't we?
It is. And when you read about Douglas Adams, he didn't really plan it that much. He says, like, he just went with the flow. So, you know, you have, like, all these authors that they go through planning, and then you have this guy who just started writing.
I think that works really well for some writers. I've got to be honest, that's generally how I start things as well. But and I think Stephen King is another one as well. He's like, he'll have the character in his head and then he'll just see where they go.
Yeah, I used to read a lot of Stephen King novels, but then I stopped because I didn't, like, enjoy them that much.
But I think there is a point in Stephen King's books where you can see very clearly when he quit drugs.
As far as I know, there was, like, a car accident or something.
Oh, yeah, that was huge. But the books went to shit long before that. It was when he became sober.
I have no idea.
And there's a very, very clear dividing line.
I thought it was because of the accident.
No. He was sober long before the accident. Of course, I had to go onto opiates and shit for that. Mm-hmm. But if you go way back, I mean, some of his very best stuff, like Cujo, is a really, yeah. really, it's quite taut. There's not a lot of flab on Cujo. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He doesn't remember writing it at all.
Wow. Okay.
And I mean, that's commitment.
That's impressive.
Really, really is. Don't remember writing a 300-page book. Came to one morning and there it was. Let's hope he remembers the movie adaptation, which is surprisingly good. Anyway. Okay, so we got Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, a great choice, and I'm sure it's a book that we're actually going to see more on this. The Good Samaritan, I've just looked up why I know The Good Samaritan.
Okay.
Because I bought it.
You did?
I did buy it.
That's a really good book.
It better be.
It's amazing. It's I can't say too much because then I can ruin it for you. But I think it's, first of all, it's an exceptionally original concept as well. It's very dark. Okay. And I like dark. I was waiting for that's what she said at that point.
I would never be so crude.
And it just shows you as well how vulnerable people can be to specific, you know, like conversations. And how, yeah, easily manipulated people can be. So I found it so, so amazing. And I've read some other stuff by John Mars, and they're also a bit dystopian. And I think it's, yeah, dystopia is becoming a reality. So.
So it's more like a training manual.
Exactly, exactly. Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy as a training manual will come for sure.
Let's hope we're long, long dead by then.
Yes, but at least we'll have a towel to take.
But The Good Samaritan, so is The Good Samaritan a book that you've reread as well?
Yes.
Because very often thrillers don't stand up to a rereading very often.
No, I still reread it.
Okay. Well, I'm expecting great things then.
It's okay if you don't like it.
No, you're in trouble if I don't like it.
What are you going to do?
Ooh.
Annoy me, you already do that.
Yeah, that's true.
Text me random stuff, you already do that.
Yeah, true. I'll think of something. It won't be very good, but I'll think of something. First thing in my head was dirty protest. I'm going to shit my pants and blame you.
Go for it.
Too late. So what is Chasing the Scream?
Chasing the Scream is written by Johan Hari. It takes into the addiction concept that it's mostly because we lack connectivity as humans. And to a certain extent, it does... I think it reflects a lot on Gabor Mate's work, where it's not necessarily always the substance or the behavior, but it's because... we are getting more individualistic as well as people. So that's why we might see more addictions coming up.
That's interesting because I was reminded of something that I read years ago, but I read a summary of something recently and it went into the flawed experiment with rats and...
yes, he mentions that as well, the rat park.
Yeah, and it's so for anybody that's not familiar with it, there's an experiment with rats in, you know, a little cage, and they had two water bottles. One had drugs in, one didn't. The rats liked the one with the drugs in more. Oh, right. Okay. Drugs are potent things then. But actually somebody thought, this isn't where an animal would make a choice. This isn't how a human would make a choice. Yeah. This isn't even how a rat would make a choice. They created an environment where there were other rats, where there were things to do, where there was plentiful food and all of that. And in that environment where the rat was part of community, the rats didn't touch the drugged water. They only had the non-drugged water. And that is very telling. But I've been saying for years, like, you know, we have all of these ways to communicate now, and yet we're further apart than we've ever been. All of these ways of communicating are creating greater polarization, not greater togetherness. And the way that also algorithms work in our entertainment means that we're not exposed to things that we might find challenging even. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think we're being roundly fucked.
Yes. And you have more extremist views now. So it's really easy, like you see more on Flat Earth Society, you see more on these conspiracy theories.
But I like the way you slipped moron in there. It's good. It's cunning.
I know. It was meant to be like that.
You just slipped it in. That's what she said. But yeah. Okay. So do I need to buy that as well?
Yes, of course.
Yeah, but the truth about addiction, do I really need the truth about addiction? I've got it. I live it, for fuck's sake.
No, you need to read. Come on.
Oh, yeah, but I only like reading things I agree with.
That's amazing. That's really good for you. It will help you grow for sure.
I think so.
Yes.
But it's so expensive. But it's my birthday this year.
It's every year.
Yeah, what's your point?
Nothing special about this one.
All right, I might buy it. Wow, that's a weird. There's these packages of books on Amazon that I'm looking at, right? And there's two by Johan Hari, Lost Connections and Chasing the Scream, which is actually, that looks like,
good as well.
Looks like quite a nice combination of books. But with packaged with No Grain Smarter Brain, and Reasons to Stay Alive by Matt Haig. I mean,
I read that one as well. Matt Haig is a really good author as well.
I do have one of his books, but I've never read anything by him. Well, I haven't read anything by him yet. Uh-huh. I bought The Humans, I think.
I have the Notes on a Nervous Planet, which was quite good. I read it in one sitting.
Were you ill or anything?
I'm always ill.
Oh, yeah, that's really sad. Sorry about that. Sad times. Okay, I'll buy those later. I promise.
I hope so.
Okay, so interesting there that you've got two books from adulthood and one book from your teens. What other stuff were you reading in your teens?
I read a lot of Stephen King.
Yeah.
John Grisham, I remember reading quite a bit.
You know my thoughts on John Grisham. Fuck.
I really used to enjoy them. No, but I was a real bookworm in my teens and my childhood.
Did you not have friends?
Obviously not. I still don't.
Fair. But John Grisham and Stephen King for your teenage reads, I mean.
To be fair, I remember, I think I was like 13 when I started reading about Freud.
Okay.
Yes, I was a bit strange. I don't know if you would have thought of that. I was a bit of a strange teenager.
I've got a Freud joke.
Do I want to hear this?
But it's not a Sigmund Freud joke. I've definitely told this one on the other podcast. So Freud's family, obviously, they have plenty of well-known members. And Clement Freud was apparently a bit dodgy in some ways. And he was a politician and I think raconteur is the general description. Man about town. But I found in the dark corner of the internet an MP3 file, and I found this many, many years ago. And the MP3 file was just called The Funniest Joke in the World Ever.mp3. So I'm like, it's either a virus or the funniest joke in the world ever. And I got lucky that day. and I still have the original file. I found it in my cloud backups just yesterday. And it's Clement Freud telling this joke. Would you like to hear the joke?
Yes.
But the problem is I can only tell it like Clement Freud tells it.
Oh, God.
So there was a gentleman, and he used to drink too much. And one day his wife said to him, if I catch you drunk again, I shall leave you. And he says, well, I don't want that. I won't drink anymore. And the next day he goes into town and he bumps into his friend. His friend says, come for a drink. Well, I could just have one. And they go into the pub and they have too much to drink. And he is sick all down himself. And he says to his friend, oh, no, I have been sick all down myself. My wife will see this and she will leave me. And his friend says, no. What you do is pop a £20 note into your top pocket and explain to your wife somebody was sick on you and they gave you £20 for the dry cleaning. Oh, it's a very good idea. And they have some more drinks. And later he goes home and he's trying to get his key in the door. And his wife hears him and she opens the door and she sees him and he's got sick all down him. And she says, oh, you are drunk. I shall leave you immediately. And he says, no. I was walking down the street and a very drunk man stumbled into me and was sick all down me. And look, he's given me £20 for the dry cleaning bill. And she said, oh. But why have you got two £20 notes? Oh, the other £20 is from the man who shat in my pants. I mean, it's a great joke, right? Mm-hmm. On the recording I've got, there's absolute silence afterwards. Because that punchline does land quite... It lands more quickly than you're expecting it. Punchline lands, absolute dead silence. And then you learn that he's in a packed room of people because the place goes wild. It's a good joke. I like it. Was Sigmund funny as well or not?
No.
That's a shame. Because it could be even better known if he'd just known a couple of good jokes.
Of course. It would have been like a proper podcast then.
I know, right?
I am so sorry.
That's all right. It's your podcast. I just keep butting in.
Yes, with wonderful jokes.
I'm so sorry. We're moving on to your movies, Maris. What are your movies? This is going to be some sick, twisted shit, isn't it? It's going to be Disney or something. Fucking sick bastard.
I don't watch a lot of movies. I wish I watched more films. But,
is that because the ones that you like aren't legal?
Yes, obviously.
Mm.
But it's Malta, so... No, my favorite movie of all time is Freaks.
Wow.
I love it. I love it. I watch it so many times. I adore it.
Wow. I was not expecting that.
Really?
So I can well believe that people listening are not going to be familiar with Freaks. So Freaks was made in about, I think, 1932.
Yes.
By a director called Todd Browning. Browning is best remembered for directing Dracula with Bela Lugosi, which was obviously a huge hit. And when he made Freaks, the studio had actually... unusually for that period, the studio actually gave him a lot of freedom. Yeah. Saw the finished film, cut it to shit because they were horrified. And a lot of the film is lost forever, unfortunately. Yeah. But I think there's about 60, 70 minutes still in existence.
Yeah.
One of us. But it is an incredibly influential film as well. I mean, it's and was decades ahead of its time. I mean, Could you make it now? Maybe.
No. I think they tried to do something with American Horror Story.
Uh-huh.
They tried to do something like The Circus, but it's not the same. I mean, Freaks is beautiful because they didn't fake the, I don't know if you call them disabilities, but they didn't really fake the issues.
Yeah.
You had people with no arms. You had like Torso Man. Oh my God.
That was Johnny Eck, wasn't it? If I remember right.
I don't know the names. I only know him as Torso Man, but I always found it so amazing. Even the concept of, because obviously then I like got obsessed with that film, but even the concept of circus freaks before and, you know, like how they would make a living in this way, but there was still abuse, which is very evident in the film.
Yeah.
But even how they did the film, like you see Torso Man and he's lighting up a cigarette with matches. And it was done in a way to show how, you know, like, although they have certain issues, for sure, because it's not that easy to light up a cigarette with matches with no arms and legs.
That's what she said.
Obviously. Even I missed that one. But it was just so done so well. It's impressive. I love that film. Not a lot of people know about that film, which is very sad. I think it should be taught in schools.
I think one of the reasons why it's been forgotten and why it was maligned for decades is that, excuse me, able-bodied people struggle to talk about disability because they're worried about pissing people off.
Yeah.
And I think in modern films, and I was talking to somebody about this just yesterday, in modern films, the, I can't remember what their names are now. Bloody hell. Two brothers that make movies. Hang on.
Very easy.
But I mean, they've made some very, very famous movies and I just can't remember what their name is. The Farrelly brothers, Peter Farrelly and Bobby Farrelly. Best known for the Something About Mary. In most of their movies, certainly post Something About Mary, there are disabled actors in almost all of them. Some of their movies are almost entirely disabled actors because they're actors first and the disability is second. They're just people who are going about their lives kind of thing. In fact, a recent Woody Harrelson film, I think it's called Champions, is directed by one of the Farrelly brothers. And it's a really decent movie. And they did that Johnny Knoxville movie, The Ringer, where he pretends to be disabled so that he can go and storm the Disabled Olympics.
I haven't seen that one.
When I say that to you, though, it sounds as though it's going to be just fucking wrong, doesn't it?
Yes.
But they know what they're doing. I mean, I'll be stunned if they don't have disabled relatives or something in their lives that's led them to say, you know, actually just be normal around people. It's fine.
Yeah. Okay.
But their movies are the closest thing to the approach of Freaks in that these are just people getting on with their shit.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that's kind of what Freaks leaves you with. It's like, yeah, they're just doing things.
And they do it, but they do it so well. And if you have to consider, it's from the 1930s, but even like there's a scene where you have this woman with no arms and she's just using her legs to drink wine. And it's done in such a casual manner that, you know, you actually see the adaptability of it. And how instead of trying to change themselves, they just make it work. And I think it's such a beautiful concept.
Yeah.
And then obviously you have the issue with then the woman who tried to abuse the ringleader, whatever you call him. And no, I think it's such a beautiful film.
Do you ever see, what is he? Is he Mexican? I can't remember if he's Mexican or Polish. I've got a feeling he's Mexican. Alexander Jodorowsky made a movie called Santa Sangre, which is absolutely batshit. about a guy who's totally dominated by his mother, who caught her husband cheating. They were both circus workers. He was the knife thrower, and he tied her to the wheel and threw the knives very wrongly, and she lost all of her limbs, right?
Okay.
Totally domineering of her son, and it is an absolutely nutty film, but there's an amazing sequence where she is having breakfast and he is behind her being her arms. And it's so naturally and rapidly done, like, you know, little scratches and reading the paper and drinking the juice. It's like, it's God knows how many times they must have rehearsed that. It's absolutely stunning. It's like a dance. It's really, really amazing. It's a mental film. It's a lot of fun. You'd like it. I think I can say quite safely. Yeah. Okay. So we've got Freaks, which, God, people are full of surprises, aren't they? Okay.
I've spent so many years obsessed with Freaks. I even managed to get, like, when they showed it once in France, they had like the movie pamphlet in the cinemas, and I got a copy of that. That's like, wow. I managed to find it on eBay. Like, I have the DVD. I love it.
Amazing. Okay.
Yeah.
Have you got two other movies for me?
I have, obviously, but this is a bit predictable for sure. Requiem for a Dream.
How is that predictable?
Because it's about addiction.
Yeah, most people don't watch it twice, though.
No, I watch it on repeat as well. And I read the book, and the book is amazing.
He's a stunning writer. It's Hubert Selby, isn't it? Hubert, yes. Selby Jr.
It's amazing. And it's done with no punctuation marks.
Yeah.
So you have kind of the same speed that you have in the film.
Well, he's from that period where people were really fucking around with things, you know, Burroughs and Ken Kesey and all of those writers.
Exactly.
And they were messing around with the boundaries of language.
Yeah.
I mean, I read, Last Exit to Brooklyn.
I love it.
But it's like being punched in the face a lot.
Yes.
That kind of writing is rare, to say the least.
And the film was done so well.
Well, nobody's going to read that book and think, God, this would make a great film. This is going to be really easy to make. You know what I mean?
It's in the film. You know that the...
I did not know that. Who is he in the film?
At the end, when there's the prison guard shouting at them, that's him.
Interesting.
Yes. I don't watch a lot of films, but then I get obsessed with a few.
Well, no, it's an amazing... I remember it was recommended to me by some friends, and I was dog-sitting for them this one weekend. They had the biggest Great Dane I've ever seen, Shamrock. She was an absolutely lovely dog, and had a very, very strong bond with that dog I did. She was very special. And like all good Great Danes, she had her own settee. And so they were away, and I was in their place for the weekend. And they'd recommended Requiem for a Dream. And the way that they pitched it to me was, it starts off with a kid selling his mother's television, which he's stolen in order to buy drugs. And it goes downhill from there. I'm like, okay.
It's done so well.
But then, you know, it's got Ellen Burstyn, it's got Keith David. But the selling point for me was Christopher McDonald. I love Christopher McDonald. He's Tappy Tibbins. And so I sit down and I watch this movie, and the end of the movie, I was actually howling. I was crying so much. I mean, and the dog, she just gets up from her settee, walks over to me, and just, I mean, her tongue was like this wide, and she just licked me from here to here. But unfortunately, I was howling, so my mouth was open.
Oh, God.
So basically, she went, oh, and then carried on. So I got a big slice of tongue pie from a Great Dane. So my mate Becky comes to stay for the weekend, right? And she's like, do you want to watch a movie? I'm like, always. What should we watch? I don't know. She picks up Requiem for a Dream. She's like, well, you said this is extraordinary. I'm like, yeah, it is. She's like, well, how bad can it be? So anyway, me and Becky and my flatmate Jules, we sit and watch the film. The film ends and that Kronos Quartet soundtrack comes on. And they just both sit there in absolute silence. And a minute or so later, Becky just goes, "Yeah, cheers, John." I did try to tell you. It's like, I love the film. It's an extraordinary film and it's incredibly bold and really well made. And it is the visual equivalent of that writing that
yes.
You know, there are no rules. The editing and the split screen, it's extraordinary.
It's impressive.
Somebody did suggest that the reason that Jennifer Connelly got the Best Actress Oscar the following year was because she should have got it for Requiem, but they couldn't possibly give it to somebody doing that role.
Really? I had no idea.
I don't know whether that's true.
Yeah.
It's possible, but I mean, I think it's, and I'm a big fan of Jennifer Connelly. I think mm-hmm. she's ridiculously talented. I think that's the best thing she's ever done. Same for Jared Leto, and definitely the same for the Wayans boy. Yes. But it's probably also Ellen Burstyn's best. It's not Chris McDonald's best, because, of course, he was in Happy Gilmore.
I haven't watched Happy Gilmore.
It's very, very good. There's a great little exchange between him and Adam Sandler in it, where he's trying to be intimidating to Sandler, and he's like, "I eat pieces of shit like you for breakfast." And Gilmore just goes, "You eat pieces of shit for breakfast?" But actually, my favorite Chris McDonald role is he plays Thelma's husband in Thelma and Louise. And his interplay with Harvey Keitel and Stephen Tobolowsky is one of the highlights of that movie. He's a fantastic actor. Big fan. Anyway, digress. How do we get into Chris McDonald from there? Maris, you're a bad influence.
Yes.
Were you reversing just then?
Yes, it was just me right now, reversing my desk. Is this me? Ah, well, the construction and everything.
I've got a cat on this end. You've got reversing desk.
Yes, because just behind me they're building. So, yeah.
What are they building?
Apartments for a change.
Yeah, that'll make a nice change in Malta. So we've got Freaks. We've got Requiem for a Dream. You've got a movie left. Anything?
So, I couldn't think of a film. But can I get away with a short series?
You can have a series on this because it's 2025.
Okay. Fleabag.
Wow, you are full of surprises.
You've watched it?
I've seen a little bit of it.
I adore it. It's absolutely amazing. It's impressive. I love the comedy about it. I love the transition of even how she talks to the camera all the time, like she involves you, she breaks that fourth wall, and then the priest as well does it. Like it's beautiful. It's the script is brilliant. The acting is amazing.
I really respect something that Phoebe Waller-Bridge said about that. She made a really good point. She acknowledged that the luxury of being able to write that is something that is only afforded to the middle classes and above. If she had been working class, she would not have had the time or the energy to do what she did. And actually, that's a pretty bold admission from somebody that is middle class. And she's dead right, because I've got a fully formed sitcom in my head and I do not have the energy or the time to commit that to anything.
I'm sure it would be amazing.
You have no idea. It'd be the greatest thing ever written. And also, I think the sweariest.
Of course. And everyone on this podcast will mention that as one of their movies.
Well, I certainly hope so. But, you know, we'll see. Maybe we'll include a category for people to bring something they want to burn. Fleabag, though. It's Fleabag. Look at this. Freaks, Requiem for a Dream. I can see the path from one to the other. to Fleabag. Do you know what I mean?
It's brilliant.
It better be. I might even watch it now.
No, you need to. It's only 2 seasons and it's so good.
It's British seasons as well, isn't it? So it'd be like 6 episodes.
Yes. I think it's only 4. I'm not sure, but... And I also have the book where she put the scripts in it. Which is really good.
Yeah, because she needs more money. Okay, now you've got one song. And the example I always give of this is you've got one song. Now, it's feasible that somebody might pick Eye of the Tiger, but nobody is going to pick a Survivor album, are they? Mm-hmm. So that is my example. So what's your song, your one song? What's your one song that G's you up and makes you want to kill goats on a tropical island?
It's really not going to be good now. Because when you said one song, I was thinking of a song that, you know, always kind of when I listen to it, it takes me back to a certain point. But
yeah,
it's a
that
song,
works.
It
doesn't have to be a GU Up song. It's like everybody's okay. Got a song that they never skip.
It's Drugs Don't Work by The Verve.
Wow.
I love The Verve. Okay.
Most people seem to favor Bittersweet Symphony.
No, Drugs Don't Work. I remember clearly because when I heard it the first time, one of my favorite uncles was dying with cancer. And at that point in time, when I heard it, I was still like late teens. I remember that for me, it signified how the drugs that should be helping him are not helping him. So I totally understood it in a different way. And then obviously I started reading about the song, but it always takes me to that point. And I think it's just like it humbles you, you know, it's anyone can go through this shit and everything. So, yeah.
Wow. And it is a great tune. Like I'm not a fan of The Verve, but I really like that song. It's kind of, I think... Melancholy is an overused device in music and it's a very difficult thing to get authentically right. Yeah, but I think The Drugs Don't Work does it really well.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, it's a gorgeous little song. Okay. Are you going to have a pet with you on the island?
If I can revive her.
Yeah, yeah. Any pet from your life.
I had this childhood dog called Bimba.
Bimbao?
Bimba.
Bimba, okay, just not Bimbo.
No, not Bimbo. Bimba. Bimba, I think it's more like an Italian, like it's a sweet name.
If you're okay.
Based in Malta, not in the UK. I never even thought about Bimbo related to it. She was my dog. We found her, I think I was like 14 years old. And my friend of mine found like this little box, like really small box. Next to the sea in Slema. And she was hearing some noises coming from it. And then when she opened the box, which was with tape, there was this little puppy. So someone was trying to drown this litter. And she came to me and like I remember knocking on so many doors and said, "You, where I live, if someone wants to take this dog." And then I just went up to my mom and said, like, "Can we keep this dog?" And she said, "Ask your dad." And my dad was like, "Yeah, sure, why not?" So we already had a dog, so this would be like the second dog that we had at the time. But she was absolutely beautiful, an amazing soul. She would stay everywhere with me. She would always sleep with me on the bed. It was just like
Yep, she's allowed.
Yes, I would love to see her again.
Yeah. I hear you. I know just where you're coming from.
Yeah.
Okay, so we got Bimba. An object. An object, a thing, something.
This, I may be a bit personal. So for me, I'm quite a minimalist, so I'm not really the type of person that like.
For anybody that's just on the audio version of this, she's surrounded by books.
But I'm not like the type of person. Yes, okay, book hoarding will be an issue for me, but I'm not the type like I need a lot of bags or a lot of shoes or a lot of clothes type of person.
Okay.
But I always carry my grandmother's ring.
Okay.
So my grandma, she was living in Marsa, which is not, it can be quite difficult to live in the area. And she was an amazing woman, like brilliant. She could read and write, which for that age obviously wasn't that typical. She was always unapologetically her, which made it like brilliant as well. And I remember at one point, her roof collapsed where she was living. So she came to live with us until they fixed it. And she was like the best, like a best friend that I had. I would be so happy to go home after school and she would always be knitting. But I remember her like keeping always this facade. But then like in the evenings and stuff, you would see some sadness come in. And one of her sons had a gambling problem. So for me, it was always like when I started working in this area, I didn't really want to work in gambling because the only connotations I had about gambling were bad. So when I joined Unibet, I think I was like 21 years old or 22. For me, it was like, this is a temporary job. I don't want to stay here. I hate this industry and it's not good. And, you know, I've seen like how bad it can be. But that's what also kept me going. So that's why I started looking into markers of harm, into prevention, always thinking more than for my uncle, actually for my grandma. So I always like to keep that ring. Like if I lose it, it will be very difficult for me.
Yeah.
But yeah, it always humbles me. I think affected others, they're like, we don't talk about enough about them. But they're so impacted. It's just like a ripple effect. Like I remember this story when I think I was like 7 years old and we used to have, so obviously there wasn't like the internet like today. So I remember I used to like to do a lot of crafts and I was obsessed with Barbies. And I saw this pink newspaper on the kitchen table. And I was so happy because it's pink, so I could do like dresses with it and everything. And then my uncle comes in and he was like quite, not shouting, but he was very anxious, where is his newspaper? And I didn't realize it was a newspaper, but it was like La Gazzetta dello Sport, which was like, it has all the sports results and everything. So I couldn't comprehend why, like, what did I do wrong? It's just a newspaper. So there were things like that, or like how my grandma would be like impacted because of his gambling and sometimes how he might steal her money and she wouldn't eat and she would still, the love she had for him was impressive because I don't think I could do that, but she would give up everything for him. So yeah.
What happened to your uncle?
I have no idea.
Wow. Okay. Wow, I was not expecting that, and you're full of surprises. But it's it's a very interesting story of how you came into the industry or why you stayed in the industry. And yeah, you know, the affected others thing is it's a big deal for any addiction.
Yes. And to be fair, I mean, with like at that time, you could see the signs much clearer than online.
Yeah.
Because obviously he would go to the horse racing, he would do all these things and you would see it. But online now you have like this whole new hidden addiction coming in. So yeah, so whenever it got really bad, because I'm not going to say like it was always easy working in this field, at least I would say, you know, at least I'm trying to make a difference.
Yep, totally. Well, let's hope that he is out and about somewhere and he's sorted his shit out. By which I mean, of course, he's gotten help and support in the right way. Wow. Okay. You didn't describe your grandmother's ring, though.
I can, but if it's audio, then you can't really see it.
Well, that's why a description goes a long way.
It's a really thin gold ring, which is like twisted. I don't know how you can explain it.
Yeah, it's almost like a braid design.
Yes, yes. She always wore these rings. She had quite a few, and my mom gave me one of them.
Okay. My dad had some gold rings, and they looked really tacky and awful.
No, this is really sweet.
And I've definitely told this one on the podcast before. I visited my parents' house with some friends, and are you familiar with the shop Argos in the UK?
Yes.
Okay. As we were leaving, so my dad came to the door, and he was wearing his gold chains and his fucking awful rings. And as we walked away from the house, my friend Al just turned to me and said, "Your dad looks like he's been shot out of a cannon through Argos." It's like, yeah, he really does. And amazingly, he left all of his gold jewelry to me.
And you don't wear them?
Oh, I fucking sold it. I hated that asshole. Should I keep something? What? Just to have around so I can hate it?
Yes.
No, I'm good, thanks. Let's move forward. You might regret it one day.
No.
Okay, so great choice of object. You've got one piece of advice to give your younger self, and you choose when you get to receive it. This is a difficult question.
It is. It really is. I think even just choosing the age can be quite difficult.
And there's no pressure, but we've had some great answers on this one already.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. It's impressive. No, I think if I look at my younger self, so my son, so I have two sons. I have a 7-year-old and a 5-year-old. And the 7-year-old, around 3 years ago, was diagnosed with autism.
Uh-huh.
And it was really weird transition for me because all of the things he did, which would be like criteria for the spectrum, were things I did.
What are the odds?
So obviously, like, which is really ironic because I studied psychology and everything, but I just thought I was weird, or I was just a bit eccentric. And I always advocate to him, like, you know, just be yourself. Just it's okay to be weird. It's okay to be different. And I don't mind that. Like, if you don't like the noise, we can leave. But not like. So I think throughout my years, there were so many times that it would have been undiagnosed autism, which was very difficult, like social settings, understanding people.
But you mentioned being on the bus earlier, the
yes,
noise,
the sound,
people.
The noise. Or like I couldn't understand, especially teenage years, like why some stuff are important for people. Like, well, like if someone said this about you, okay. You know, or why I don't understand some people and stuff like that, which I think is why I started reading psychology. And then there were a lot of social situations where I would try to fit in a way that I didn't need to. So, like, I remember when I used to have people come at Kindred, like investors or treatment centers, I would always try to wear some colorful clothes because I thought that was normal. So I think the advice would be just, I know how corny it is and won't be as good as the others, but it's just like, embrace your freakiness. It's just embrace your weird self.
What age?
I would say from the age of 5. Because I still remember a lot
Start
of
young.
Situations. Yeah, no, but I remember a lot of situations where, like, during school, they make you during break time play. And there's a lot of noise. And for me, it was a bit too much. So I would read a book instead. And most of the time, like, I would feel the pressure from the educators, like, no, you have to play. And I think if I just explained myself, like, you know, I need a break, probably. But instead, I would just try to force myself to play with the others.
Yeah.
It wasn't that bad. Not your best, maybe, but not that bad.
No, it's not bad at all. It's authentic. See, but it is also a super important lesson, and it's one that I've been trying to teach my kids. A slightly different angle. I've been saying to my kids, you know, a lot of people, you know, even grown-ups haven't learned yet that their opinion's only important to themselves.
Exactly.
And like, if somebody says something to you and you don't like it, the first thing you need to think is, do I give two fucks about this person's opinion? If the answer is no, then I wouldn't let it upset you.
Yeah, and that's what I love about Logan. Like, he really doesn't care. Like, at one point, we were next to summer school, and this kid was making fun of him. And she was saying, oh, because, you know, Logan really doesn't know how to dance. He was dancing funny. And he just looked at her, and he said, yeah, this is how I dance. And he started doing, like, this fake guitar stuff, like, no fucks given, you know, this is who I am. And I think that is so beautiful. So yeah,
definitely the way forward.
I wish maybe someone would have told me, like, you know, like, don't try to fit in. Don't try. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We've all been guilty of trying to fit in. Even me, would you believe? Didn't work.
We know.
I got found out fairly quickly. Wow. Okay. Dr. Catania, thank you very much for joining us today. Our guests are generally C-suite thought leaders.
Amazing.
And thank you for giving me the
opportunity. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Finally, I can be in those ranks as well.